This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Paul and Tass here on Saturday Magazine. And our next guest is going to be DC Katie Miller, Tass.
Thank you, Paul.
About 12 months ago, Paul, Victoria Police actually raided a bookshop that is very well known in our community. It's been part of our community. It's part of the history and the fabric and the infrastructure of our community, Hares and Hyenas. And in that raid, one of the members of our community, Nick Demopoulos, was hurt, seriously hurt, resulting in our permanent injuries. What's occurred since then is that the Victoria Police or somebody has referred the case on to IBAC, which is the Independent Broad-Based Anti-Corruption Commission. It's a commission that's been set up specifically to investigate police corruption and police behaviour. We're very fortunate this morning to have DC Miller. Good morning to you, Katie. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Taz. Thank you, Paul. Great to be with you.
Great to have you on the airwaves this morning. Katie, could you tell us, just to sort of kick off the conversation, what's the role of IBAC? And what are your powers to investigate, to question, and to apply some of those findings and results that come out of your work?
Sure. IBAC is Victoria's anti-corruption and police oversight body. So we've been set up to expose and prevent corrupt conduct in the public sector and police misconduct. We do that in a number of ways. You've mentioned one of them, which is investigations. But we also have a number of other functions that we use to expose and prevent corruption and police misconduct. And some of those will be more focused on the systems and the environments in which police and the public sector operate. So things like audits and research reports are also an important part of what we do. When it comes to investigations, which is probably the tool that most people and certainly your listeners will probably be familiar with, we do have thresholds before we can start to investigate things. So we do focus on serious and systemic corrupt conduct and police misconduct when we investigate.
So, Katie, thank you for giving us that rundown. That's a good sort of sounding board. Can we talk specifically now about Operation Lind? And this incident obviously resulted in a member of the LGBTI community, Mr. Nick Demopoulos, sustaining quite a very serious injury. What exactly did IBAC investigate and what did it find?
Yeah, so when we decided to investigate this, we identified that the first thing we needed to do was to have a really clear understanding of what had happened. In the immediate aftermath, there was a lot of confusion about what had actually happened. So our first step was to investigate what had happened on the night that police entered the Hares and Hyenas bookshop. We then looked at, once we knew what had happened, we looked at were there any consequences that should flow from that. And when it comes to IBAC's jurisdiction, we focus on whether any criminal offences have been committed and whether there's been any breaches of police discipline. So that's the limit of what we look at in terms of legal issues.
So what did you find?
So we found that police were lawfully authorised to enter the Hares and Hyenas bookshop. We found that they lawfully arrested Mr. Demopoulos and that the use of force in the circumstances was proportionate. We also found that, contrary to the Charter of Human Rights and Common Law, Mr. Demopoulos was not told that he was under arrest or why he was under arrest. And we've asked Victoria Police for some further information about why that's so.
Katie, we got to ask the question. One of the things our listeners are struggling with is that how can someone be about their own business in their own home late at night and they suddenly have a police presence with them and severe injury? His arm was pulled out of his socket, and he'll be carrying those impacts for a long, long time. How can that be described as lawful, proportionate force?
Yes, and I can understand. I can understand the feeling and the sentiment from the community, and we have been asked that question about how could this be lawful, how could this be proportionate. And that's one of the reasons why I am really grateful for the opportunity to speak to you and your listeners today. So, what the law looks at is what was the reasonableness of the actions taken at the point in time? And to explain this, I do need to go into a little bit of the background. On the night, police were pursuing a person who had been alleged to have committed some really serious crimes earlier in the evening, including crimes of violence. When they arrived at the Hares and Hyenas bookshop, they had the belief that the person they were pursuing had escaped into the bookshop. Now, we looked at the information that was available to police and we formed the view that that belief was a reasonable one. Now, Victoria Police subsequently came out and said that that belief was a mistaken one. It wasn't accurate. That did not change the fact, though, that at the point in time when they entered, it was lawful. The law doesn't sort of look back and say, oh, well, you got it wrong, it was a mistake, and therefore it's now unlawful. The law really looked at what did you know at the time.
And how do you explain the injury? How do you explain the impact that this has had on the individual? Is that appropriate?
So in terms of the injury, so what then happens is that police pursue Mr. Demopoulos, and again, they thought they were pursuing somebody who had committed some very serious offences. They thought that he was running out into Johnson Street where there were, you know, pubs and clubs operating and sort of avenues for escape. On the other side of the coin, Mr. Demopoulos thought that he was being pursued by home invaders who might cause him harm. And so his evidence was that he was fleeing for his life. Now, when you've got, on the one hand, police thinking that they are pursuing an offender who at the time they thought was armed, and on the other hand, you've got somebody who thinks they're fleeing from a home invader, there's a lot of effort and a lot of force that is used by both sides. And during that struggle, Mr. Demopoulos has sustained a very serious injury. Now, again, what the law looks at is the law looks at what was the purpose, the objective that police had when they applied the force, and was that not disproportionate to the objective? And again, because we have, you know, both sides with very sort of, serious and real objectives in mind, a lot of effort and force being used, IBAC found that in the circumstances, the force was not disproportionate to the Victoria Police objective of arresting a person.
Katie, I think what you're outlining is the complexities that IPAC have to deal with in trying to determine exactly what went on and what actually happened. I do think there's a question. I think we can understand that the police legally went into those premises based on the premises you talked about in terms of they were trying to pursue who they thought was a different person. Clearly, there was a mistaken identity case. I still think our listeners would struggle to understand the proportion that was used, even if it was a case of mistaken identity. And I think that's something that the grey area that you've highlighted in the struggle is something that still could have probably been cleaner in terms of the IBAC investigation.
Yeah, and it is a really complex piece of law. So it's the provision in the Crimes Act, you know, it's essentially a defence to what would otherwise be a charge of assault. And I'll be honest with you, I've been, you know, looking at this provision for more than 12 months. This is certainly not the first complaint of excessive use of force that I've looked at. And it is a really difficult provision to apply. And it's not one that intuitively makes a lot of sense. One of the things that's difficult about that provision...
I'm glad you've said that, because that certainly is the view of many members of our community. I mean, a member of our community is now permanently disabled as a result of this, and it's very difficult not to feel that this isn't a case of perhaps discrimination. It's just very, very difficult, Katie.
It is a difficult case, and one of the difficult things about this provision is that it doesn't have regard to the seriousness of the injury that's sustained. So the law looks at the reasonableness and the proportionality of the force used, but it's proportionate to the objective, not the injury that's sustained. And so it means that you can have force can be disproportionate, even though little or no injury is sustained. And also, as has happened in this case, you can have force that is found to be proportionate and yet result in a very serious injury.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Paul and Tass. We're in the middle of a conversation with Deputy IBAC Commissioner, Katie Miller.
Katie, hi, it's Paul again. Again, thank you for joining us this morning. And I think you're shedding an awful lot of light on this IBAC investigation that's so important to our community to really understand. Can we just take you back to the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities and just to try and question, how was this arrest lawful if Mr. Dobnopoulos was told he was not being arrested, or why he was being arrested? And is that typical of the Victoria Police Public Order Response Team?
So in terms of the Charter of Human Rights, the Charter of Human Rights provides additional obligations on public authorities that's really about the way in which they go about their functions. The Charter makes clear that if a public authority does not comply with a human right, that's not a criminal offence. So before the break, we were talking in length about what the law says about the use of force and when it will be authorised, when police will be authorised to use force. If police are otherwise permitted to use the force, but in doing so they breach human rights, that won't make their use of force unlawful. It won't make it a criminal offence. It may have other consequences. And one of those consequences may be that a breach of police discipline, and that's why IBAC has asked Victoria Police for more information about why Mr. Dobnopoulos was not told that he was under arrest and the reasons for that on the night.
Okay, it's understood that Mr. Dobnopoulos was actually in bed. He was sleeping.
Yeah,
that's right.
I was going to my question was going to be exactly that, Tass. If he was under the impression, this is what you said earlier in the interview, that he was being invaded by some strangers in his home, he would undoubtedly be extremely frightened and scared if the police had identified themselves as police in his bedroom and said he was under arrest.
They were there.
Then he may not have given the reaction that he gave in terms of that adrenaline fight for life sort of thing. So it's quite a critical point that if they'd actually followed policy and procedure, then the ensuing altercation may not have actually happened.
Well, in terms of the finding about the failure to advise Mr. Dobnopoulos that he was under arrest, that the obligation to do that really arose at the point that the police had restrained Mr. Dobnopoulos. So after the struggle outside the Hares and Hyenas bookshop. In terms of when they entered the premises, there was conflicting information and evidence about what was said when police entered the premises upstairs, and ultimately IBAC was not able to determine what was or was not said when police entered.
Now, you know, one of the things on many members of our community's mind about this issue is, was this a case of perhaps homophobia, or even racism for that matter? There was some discussion about there being police out there looking for somebody who was a member of a Lebanese gang, and there was also some concerns about, you know, whether this bookshop was actually something else. But, you know, can you comment on that? I mean, the point is, was there any institutionalised discrimination here in the police force?
This was one of the issues that IBAC considered and explored through the investigation. And at the private examinations of the police members, which I presided at, the questions were asked. So we asked the police members what their knowledge of the bookshop was, what their knowledge of the occupants was, and who they thought they were looking for. And on hearing that evidence, IBAC found that the officers were not aware of the special place that this premises holds in the LGBTIQA community. They weren't aware that it was an LGBTIQ bookshop. They weren't even aware that it was a residence. So they didn't expect to find occupants at all, and so therefore had no expectations or knowledge about the sexuality or ethnicity of anyone who was in the premises.
Did they have a warrant to go into this bookshop?
No, they did not. And they so this was a situation where they were pursuing somebody who had been alleged to have committed offences earlier in the evening. And going back to the law does permit Victoria Police to enter premises and arrest somebody without a warrant if they have that reasonable belief that the person has committed serious indictable offences or indeed may be continuing to commit offences.
So belief as opposed to evidence?
It's got to be a reasonable belief. So that's a, that's an objective test, and that's something that IBAC looked at. So IBAC looked at what was the information that was available to the police officers before they entered the premises, and was it reasonable for them to have that belief on the basis of that information available at the time? And IBAC found that it was reasonable, even though ultimately it was mistaken.
Katie, in finalising your report, do you have do you consult with members of the LGBTI community, and does in fact do people like Nick Demopoulos himself get consulted and get an opportunity to review the report, including the police for that matter?
When IBAC makes its findings, we have a number of ways in which we can then disclose and sort of inform relevant people about what was found. In this instance, IBAC has written to both Victoria Police and Mr. Demopoulos, letting them know what IBAC found. There isn't a report as such. I understand that there are some members in the community who have heard that there is a report, and I just want to clarify that although there's been sort of mention of a report, what exists are outcome letters. So letters to Victoria Police and Mr. Demopoulos advising them of what the findings were.
Right.
In terms of Mr. Demopoulos, his involvement in the investigation, I will clarify that he was also privately examined. I presided at that examination. So his evidence was certainly considered and indeed was an important part of the investigation.
Right.
And so, Katie, out of your report, are there recommendations that can be implemented, and will these be implemented?
There were recommendations made to Victoria Police about some processes and policies that IBAC thought could be improved. It's very rare for IBAC to conduct an investigation and not find something that can be improved. I think that we are all, works in progress, and that's certainly true for the public sector and Victoria Police as all organisations. So when IBAC conducts an investigation, we will be focused on the individual incident that we are investigating, but we're always looking for where are the opportunities for continuous improvement and with a view to ensuring that these sorts of incidents don't occur again.
And does IBAC have the ability to enforce those recommendations that are actually taken on board, or are they purely recommendations?
They are recommendations, but if an agency chooses not to follow our recommendations, we can ask for an explanation for why that is. And if we're not satisfied with the response, then we can make a report to Parliament. And we do report to Parliament pretty regularly. If your listeners are interested in finding out more about that, they can go to our website, www.ibac.vic.gov.au, and you can see there the sorts of reports that we've made to Parliament in the past.
Katie, I've had a good look at your website and quite enjoyed sort of reading some of the reports and some of the work that you've done. Please know, this is not meant to be an interrogation. We're really wanting to understand what in fact did take place and how we can help our community to understand this as well. Unfortunately, the feedback that we're getting is that our members are not convinced that that this was a proportionate response. But I want to go back to the issues around discrimination. Were you satisfied that this was not a case of homophobia and racism? Were you satisfied as the one of the leading investigators for this investigation?
I was satisfied, and that's because the Victoria Police members, when they were questioned about, you know, what did you know about this premises, what sort of information did you have available to them, they knew that it was a bookshop, but they didn't really know much more beyond that. They didn't even understand that it was a bookshop with a residence upstairs. That was something that they only learned when they had entered the premises. And so they did not expect to find anyone other than the person they thought they were pursuing. They didn't expect to find anyone else in the premises. So they hadn't turned their mind to, what the sort of, who those people might have been and whether they might have been LGBTQA or if they had a certain ethnicity. What they were doing was pursuing somebody, and they had a very brief description from another police member about the person they were supposed to be pursuing, but they really didn't have much information at all about there being people in the residence or who they might be.
Kate, can I just take you back one second? Because I think one of the things that we talked about earlier once was during your investigation, and I think we can understand the point about the police entering Hyers and Hyenas looking for someone else. But you talked about the fact that you couldn't identify or what was said or not said as the police entered the Hyers and Hyenas, which gives a sort of fundamental flaw in terms of the gap in your knowledge for the investigation. How, in that basis, did you actually come to a recommendation that you found? And wouldn't it have been better from your investigation to say there was insufficient evidence to actually determine a finding one way or the other?
The information and the evidence about what was or wasn't said when the police entered the premises is certainly would have helped us to understand the events that followed. But ultimately, when it comes to the law about whether the entry was lawful, whether the arrest was lawful, and whether the force was proportionate, what was or wasn't said doesn't change those findings. Ultimately, the important evidence for us was that police thought that they were pursuing an armed offender, and Mr. Demopoulos thought he was being pursued by home invaders. And it's that mistaken identity that has caused police to act as they did and Mr. Demopoulos to act as he did. And unfortunately, it has had really serious and grave consequences. But as the law stands, it doesn't criminalise those sorts of mistakes.
Katie, it's...
And look, can I just say, in terms please. Of your listeners, I can understand that your listeners are not satisfied or take a different view. Ultimately, with these sorts of incidents, they are issues on which reasonable minds can differ, and that's one of the reasons why it's so important for IBAC as an independent investigator, as an independent body, to conduct these sorts of investigations, because we do take a very slow, methodical, deliberate approach. We do look at the evidence. We do have robust discussions internally about how evidence should be construed and interpreted. And I think that's one of the reasons why the community can have confidence in the integrity of the findings made, even if they disagree with them, even if they wouldn't have found those findings themselves.
I was going to say, Katie, we've had the police commissioner here in this very studio. He came to the studio in the days when you could come into the studio in person, and he categorically talked to us about the work that VicPol has been doing to build relationships with the LGBTIQ plus community, and it's been very positive. He also did acknowledge that occasionally there are some bad eggs. Unfortunately, situations like this one actually focus on the bad eggs and the bad side of the business rather than the great work that's been done. I hope that this is just a one-off incident. I hope this doesn't occur again, and I hope that members of our community can feel safe. Judging on the sort of messages that we've had coming into the studio this morning, I think there's still a bit of work to be done, if I can be really honest with you. I've got messages from, if I can read out some of them to you: disproportionate, homo invasion, self-justifying sophistry, believe a cop, nope. I mean, you know, it's, there's another message here that says no Victorian is safe from a Victoria police. That's from Grant. And it just goes on and on and on like that. It's actually a bit disappointing. But I really appreciate your time this morning. You've done a great job in sort of communicating with us what this work is all about. I hope that some of our listeners can take this on board, and hopefully we can try to rebuild our confidence back in Victoria police and with authorities.
Oh, well, thank you, Taz and Paul. I've really appreciated the opportunity to come and talk to your listeners. These are important issues. They are issues that the community is interested in. And if any of your listeners want to know more about IBAC and the work that we do, I do encourage them to stay in touch and connect with us both through our website and our social media channel.
Katie, and could I just add before we go, we know it's quite unusual for you to come on and give commentary in this way, but I think our community really appreciates the support that you've come to try and actually answer these questions in a forthright and honest way. So we really do appreciate you coming on air with us this morning, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Katie, enjoy the rest of your day. It's going to be lovely out there.
Absolutely. I'm hoping to get some of the sunshine.
Good on you. That was Deputy Commissioner Katie Miller, who is from IBAC, the Independent Broad-Based Anti-Corruption Commission, talking about the recent incident at the Hares and Hyenas bookshop. Look, Paul, what are your reflections on that?
I think Katie did a very good job at trying to explain some of the complexity that IBAC have to go through when they're investigating such an incident. And you can just see from some of the words she was using probably how confusing the situation must have been at the time, and those incidences that actually went on to lead up to those horrific injuries. I believe there was probably some unanswered questions there. It's difficult to try and do that probably without having a much more deep and meaningful conversation to some of those things. But I am probably slightly heartened by the fact I do believe there was a genuine mistaken identity case there to be answered, though.
Look, I think you're right, Paul. I think it's great that IBAC were prepared to come here and talk to our community directly. I did feel like we were interrogating her, but that was not our intention. We were really pressed for time and really wanting to get the most out of the conversation. I think we landed in a pretty good spot.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.